Okay, everybody. Good evening. My name is Gwen Mandel, Director of National Outreach here at independentvoting.org, and welcome to tonight's conference call. So I turned on the morning talk shows this weekend and had a heightened sense of appreciation for Jackie Saleh and our movement. It's 18 months from the next presidential election, but the campaign has begun, and the pundits are already trying to convince us that everything has to remain the same. At a moment when droves of Americans have left the parties and the country is so desperately in need of leadership, the so-called frontrunners profess to be distancing themselves from a mess that everyone knows they helped create. At moments like this, it's really nice to know that the independent movement has a leader of leaders who's working every day on behalf of independence and the country. Jackie Saleh, independentvoting.org's president, is that kind of leader. Our successful conference in March, which Jackie led, was evidence that there's a new movement developing in our country. I really appreciate Jackie's insistence that the independent movement stay our course, that changing the political culture will not come from the top, but from the real day-to-day battles that are unfolding in our movement and our country. So I'm looking forward to today's progress report from the leader of our movement. Let me introduce to you the president of independentvoting.org, Jackie Saleh.
Gwen, thank you so much, and good evening, everyone. It was great to hear all of your introductions, and very wonderful and inspiring to me to hear so many parts of our country represented in tonight's brief conversation. You know, as independents, I think about this all the time, we look at our political system, and we see the barriers that are thrown up against us. You know, we're 42% of the voting public, which is huge, absolutely huge. But in spite of how large our numbers are, we are still pushed to the margins. And the margins of influence, the margins of participation, and the margins of value. That is a serious, serious issue, not just for independent voters such as ourselves, but I think for the entire country. You know, in many states, and you all know this very well, we're not allowed to vote in primary elections. But in the states which bar us from primary voting, we still pay the tax dollars that fund the elections that we are not allowed to vote in. I don't remember everything from history class when I went to school, but I do remember that during the American Revolution, we used to call that taxation without representation, and that seems like a very, very graphic contemporary example of that very thing. If you're an independent, the pollsters who study every detail, every single detail of how to bring about political persuasion, don't want to know why we decided to be an independent. They don't understand or they don't accept that we're making a statement about the current system and about how it needs to be changed. And in fact, if you're an independent, really there are millions, even billions of dollars that are spent every year trying to persuade us that we are really Republicans or really Democrats. The last thing that they want us to be is independence, but we are, and there are so many Americans from so many walks of life who are making that decision too. Now, I could go on for hours with the stories of the barriers that we face, and I'm sure all of you could too. It's harder for independent candidates to get on the ballot than it is for Democrats or Republicans. It's harder to raise money. Independents aren't given an automatic place in candidate debates. The bias is so clear, and it's also, I don't know if you feel this way, but for me, I know it's kind of a contradictory experience because our political system is, in many respects, built on fairness, and relative to other systems that are out there in the world, it is fair, and we take pride in that. We do. And, of course, we have fought over many generations to make our system fairer and more inclusive, and that's an important part of American history. But yet, even so, there are many fault lines of unfairness. You could call them cracks in our democracy, and they are becoming more obvious, and I would argue more serious because so many people are declaring their independence from the parties and saying that there has to be a better way. And I think that is a defining feature, really, of our movement. We are a movement in search of a better way. And I think that that is one definition of what it means to be an independent. You know, a lot of times people ask me, and I'm sure you get this question too, well, you know, who are the independents, you know, and there's much that one could say about that, but one thing that I would say that is a common thread that ties independents together, and we have very diverse views on a whole set of issues, is that we are people who are in search of a better way. We believe the political culture in this country has been degraded, that the political system is not responsive to what the American people need, and that it needs to be restructured and changed and revitalized and rebuilt in certain ways, and it needs to be made more equitable and more fair. We are not satisfied with the status quo, and we want systemic reforms that drain the partisan swamp and make way for a new political culture to grow. Now, here's part of our problem. Part of our problem is that, for the most part, the places that we have to go for relief, the politicians, the state legislatures, the Congress, the courts, the media, are all very, very partisan. And they have an inherent and sometimes even a visceral bias against us. We're constantly in the position of having to ask those who want to keep us powerless, who want to keep us on the margins, to share power. And needless to say, they don't take kindly to that idea and take the fight for open primaries, for example. The parties say, the party spokespeople say, well, if you want to vote in a primary, join a party. It's that simple. We say, oh, well, we don't want to join a party. And what's more, we don't think it's right that any American would be forced to join a political organization as a condition for participating in elections. That's not right. It's not the American way. And the partisans say, well, but these are our elections. They belong to the parties. And we say, no, no. In a democracy, the elections belong to the people, not to the parties. But tonight, in our brief time together, I want to see if I can make the case to you that independence, the independent movement, independent voting, and all of our affiliates and activists and networks all across the country, whatever you want to call this, emerging force, that we are breaking through and we are starting to breach the partisan walls that protect and preserve the power structure. And this is so important, and these are such important stories to tell about our own history. I want to tell you one story of our recent history because I think it makes this point. We all know, and many of you, in fact, were involved in this, In 2010, 5 years ago, that the voters of California enacted a nonpartisan election system in 2010. It was actually almost 5 years ago to the date. It was June 8th, 2010, that this amazing, amazing event took place. On that day, in their wisdom, and with, I think, a very profound and unappreciated sense of fairness, the voters chose a system that did something very simple but very powerful. They abolished the practice of requiring voters to join a political party in order to vote in all elections. In other words, using the power of the vote, the people of California abolished partisanship. Wow. That is an incredible story. Now, in my humble opinion, this should have been the lead story in every news outlet in the country for days, for weeks, for months. If any of us were producing the evening news or CNN or Fox or MSNBC, we would have given the story the headline exposure it deserves. However, too little has been made of this by the official pundits and the analysts and so forth. And, you know, as I'm sure you know, the focus is on the short-term outcomes that the new system is producing out in California, which is fine. They're actually getting great outcomes, and I'm all for looking at the outcomes. In fact, Jason Olson of Independent Voice our California affiliate, and Dr. Omar Ali, who's the co-founder of North Carolina Independence and is also the associate professor of comparative African diaspora history at University of North Carolina at Greensboro, are writing a paper on these issues right now, which we're all very much looking forward to reading. But here's the thing. Let's not skip over. Let's not forget that what happened in California is that voters, independents, Democrats, and Republicans joined together to abolish a system that lavished huge privileges on the parties and on the special interests. The voters leveled the playing field, and they did this in spite of the fact that both major parties, the United States Supreme Court, the unions, and all the minor parties tried to stop them from doing so. So put another way, let me see if I can describe this in slightly different language. In the face of a very, very top-down, very hierarchical, controlled political system, these voters said, down with the hierarchy. They said, enough. We choose a more inclusionary system, a more horizontal system that fosters competition and new coalitions and breaks down the barriers that separate people from one another, because we've got to break those barriers down so that we can come together to change the culture, the political culture of this country. Now, it is interesting to me how little notice not just this event has gotten, but this character of the event, given how deeply anxious the American people are about so many of the breakdowns and the problems that are going on in our country. Actually, this might be why it's getting so little focus, because the crisis is deepening and the political implications of that are so serious. And part of what we see is that the authoritarian and hierarchical and partisan nature of our system has everything to do with the social problems that we face in America, and that you have to be blind to not see that. You know, if you live in, you know, many different parts of our country are afflicted in so many ways, but if you live in, for example, Ferguson, Missouri, as some people on tonight's call do, or if you live in Baltimore or Staten Island, where Michael Brown, Freddie Gray, and Eric Garner were killed in confrontations with the police, you have to ask, well, wait a second, what are our political leaders, what are our elected officials doing that allows these kinds of deadly and violent environments to exist? What is the mission of policing? Should we allow the policies of the 1980s to continue, where the police are conditioned to act as an occupying force, or do we need to reorganize that mission and support the police to fight crime and protect the communities? There's so many questions that we are asking. What's the future of our youth, including young people of color? Many growing up in extreme poverty at a time when the economy is so fragile and upward mobility for many different kinds of people is non-existent. We have a political system right now that doesn't have answers to those questions. In fact, I think we have a political system that literally stops us from creating answers to those questions. And the parties... Look, the parties make the rules to serve the parties, and we feel that that is wrong. That is wrong. That has to change. And I think that is part of what it means to be an independent. You know, Gwen mentioned in her introduction that she watched the talk shows and this weekend, and I watch the talk shows most Sundays. For years, as some of you know, I watched them with Fred Newman, who was an early instigator of this movement, who was a very, very great public philosopher and a radical independent. And for years, we produced a weekly transcript called Talk Talk, where we talked about what the talking heads talked about on the talk shows. There's a lot of talk right there. Fred passed away in 2011, and so Talk Talk came to an end. But I got in the habit of watching the show. So this Sunday, perhaps like some of you, I watched Meet the Press. I like Meet the Press because I like Chuck Todd. I think he's one of the better hosts and seems a little bit more open-minded than some of these other guys. On Meet the Press, one of the guests was Tom Friedman, who is a columnist. He writes for the New York Times. He's an author. I'm sure that many of you have seen him on TV. He's on TV a lot. He's written a lot of books about the social and economic transition that we're living through as a country and as a global society. And, you know, people have very strong opinions about him. Some people hate him. Some people love him. I personally don't get into that. But sometimes he does point to things that are useful, even though, frankly, he doesn't bother to talk to the people who are doing the very things that he says need to be done to bring about a developmental and a growthful transition. But anyway, Friedman was on Meet the Press on Sunday, and he gave a characterization of the state of the world and of all of the crises that are going on internationally in the Middle East, in Europe, in Greece in particular, with the debt crisis and so forth, and in Africa. And he says, and this is pretty close to a quote, he says, "We are living through a post-colonial, post-imperialist, post-authoritarian era where we need to be able to govern horizontally, but nobody's got an answer for that." So my ears perked up when he said this, because I think that what he's saying is partly true. I think his description is partly true. I don't think it's true that nobody's got an answer for that, and he should be talking to us and talking to independents and the independent movement, because that's exactly the issue that we're working on. People everywhere, all around the globe, are rising up in different ways against authority and against authoritarianism, and I think that is also, again, a huge part of what it means to be an independent. Independents don't want to be told what to think. They don't want to be told they belong in a certain category, whether it's a party category or an ideological category or any kind of category. And it's true, we do need to find ways to govern horizontally rather than hierarchically. And we understand that. And that's really what the independent movement does. We're trying to restructure the political process so it can work more horizontally on a level playing field for all. And that's why we think we need more democracy. We need, in effect, a horizontal democracy where power is distributed and exercised more equitably. That's what our movement does. We fight for that. And the old authoritarian system, which is based on top-down control and ideology and exclusionary practices, are really out of touch with the people. That's what's going on now, and this is what needs to be remedied. I want to tell you just very briefly about one situation that we're working on, and there's dozens of stories that are going on, dozens of incredible projects being developed right now by leaders on this call in Florida and Arizona and California and Oregon and Maine and New Hampshire and Maryland North Carolina and Ohio and so forth. I want to focus just briefly on a situation in South Dakota that I want to share with you. South Dakota is a closed primary state. Independents are 20% of the electorate, 20%, 1 in 5, but they have no rights. They can't vote in the primaries. They're very marginalized. Now, last year there was a big Senate race in South Dakota, and there was a Democrat, a Republican, of course, and there were two independent candidates who together polled 20% of the vote, and 17% of that went for Larry Pressler, who was a former U.S. Senator, a Republican who became an independent, who was and is a supporter of open primaries and also a friend of our movement, and 3% for Gordon Howey, who also ran as an independent. But in any event, the Republican Party controls the state, and the Republican candidate won the Senate race with about 50% of the vote, and the National Republican Party poured millions and millions of dollars into the race and only managed to come up with 50% of the vote, which was enough to win but not enough to make them feel secure. So they saw that 20% of voters had stepped outside of the partisan box, and they felt uncomfortable about that, and so they decided, well, we need to do something to rein this thing back in before it gets any bigger, before it gets out of control. So the legislature passed a bill that changed the ballot access requirements, made them more complicated and difficult, but made them in particular more difficult for independent candidates and made it harder for independent candidates to get on the ballot. But the way that they did this was particularly interesting and particularly destructive. And I want to tell you what this is. The legislature said, basically, from this point on, only independent voters can sign a petition for an independent candidate. So it will no longer be the case that Democrats and Republicans can sign a nominating petition for an independent candidate. So it not only changed the law to make an independent candidacy more difficult, because you have to find independents to sign, but it built a wall, it built a barrier between independents and other voters. Instead of allowing registered Democrats and Republicans to give an independent the right to run, which many Democrats and Republicans want to do because they believe in choice whether they want to vote for that candidate or not. But the legislature says, no, none of that, no crossover, no exercising your right as a citizen of South Dakota or as an American. Everyone has to stay where they are. Your political identity and your loyalty will be determined by what party you're in. So that was the bill. The legislature voted up the measure and the governor signed the bill. Now, this was a heck of a reaction, a heck of a reaction to the election in 2014, sorry. So anyway, this made a lot of folks very, very unhappy, including independents. And our local affiliate in South Dakota, South Dakota Voice of Independence, and our national office joined with a coalition that's putting what they call a repeal referendum on the ballot to overturn the action of the legislature. In South Dakota, the citizens have the right, and boy, is this great, to override actions of the legislature by popular vote. You've got a petition and collect enough signatures, and then that stops the action of the legislature and puts the matter before the voters, and the voters have the opportunity to decide if they like what the legislature did. So all good there, and the folks there are doing a great job, and a lot of different forces are involved in this effort, including the AFL-CIO, first time that organized labor has really come over to support the interests of independents, and we're very glad about that, and that's an important thing. But I tell you this story not just because I think it's a good example of the kinds of fights that we're having in so many different situations to assert the right of independent voters, which includes the right to build coalitions and to unite with and to provide leadership to other voters. But I tell you the story because it raises some interesting and important issues for the independent movement. It turns out that in the midst of this controversy in South Dakota, where it seems so clear that the right road to take, the action to take, is to put the repeal referendum on the ballot and give the voters the opportunity to override the legislature, it turns out that some high-profile people in the independent movement are not supporting the repeal effort. They decided not to do that. In fact, they say that they like what the legislature did, and they think it's a good thing. It's a good thing. Now, when I first heard this, I said, well, why? You know, how can that possibly be? What's the rationale here? So the rationale, they say, is that they think it should be made harder for independents to get on the ballot, because that way only independents who are, quote, credible, and, quote, legitimate, will be able to get on the ballot. They don't want any old independent to get on the ballot. They only want credible and legitimate so-called independents to get on the ballot. Now, this is an interesting thing, since, of course, the Democrats and Republicans attack the independent movement as a whole for not being credible and legitimate, and that is an issue that we want to bring out to the public and to have a fight around. But now there's voices in the independent movement that say, well, we have to make ourselves credible and legitimate. Let me give you my personal opinion on this. I think that this approach is, frankly, terribly wrong, and I think it goes against the core principles of this movement. First of all, we have to ask ourselves this question: who gets to decide who is credible or legitimate? The voters should decide that. There should be fair, non-biased and objective criteria for an independent to get on the ballot, for all candidates to get on the ballot and to get into the debates. And then the voters should decide who is credible and who is legitimate. That's their right. Second, and this is so important to me, and this goes back to what I was saying just a couple minutes ago, at a time in America and worldwide when people are pushing and straining and demanding an end to authoritarian rule, an end to hierarchical systems where some have unfair advantages over others. If we in the independent movement start adopting our own forms of hierarchy, our own forms of authoritarian structure, in my opinion, we will be doomed to failure because we will end up being a carbon copy of what already exists, the system that so many people, 42% of the country, want us to break out of. And I think this choice is going to come up more and more and more as we grow. And that's the choice between democracy and authority. We need to choose democracy. You know, I don't agree with Tom Friedman, the columnist who I was mentioning just a couple minutes ago in the following way. I don't think we are living in a post-authoritarian world. But I do think that the possibility of creating a post-authoritarian world does now exist. And in my opinion, in my experience, we have to develop that and nurture that and respect that. And that's what we're doing. That is literally what the work is that we're doing, whether it's the open primaries, pre-campaign in Florida, similarly in Arizona, whether it's efforts to bring the voice of independent voters into the presidential primary in New Hampshire, whether it's experimenting with new voting systems in Maine, and all across the country. That's what we're doing. We are creating a post-authoritarian world with new ways of exercising power that is respectful and inclusive of all people and which allows us to discover and to develop new solutions to the problems that we face. So I'm enormously excited about everything that all of you are doing. I really want you to know I follow it like so closely. I insist every day that Gwen and Nancy and Kathy and others of our folks, Sarah, at the National Office keep me fully informed of all of what's going on around the country, and I've had the opportunity to talk to many of you in an ongoing way. I am so appreciative of what you're doing, but what I really wanted to share with you tonight, and I hope I'm able to do that, is the importance of what it is that you're doing. This is not a small thing. This is transformative, what we're talking about. This is a kind of human endeavor. We're literally changing the culture of the politics of this society is in our hands and in your hands, and I am just enormously proud and enormously grateful for all that you do. So that's basically what I wanted to share with you tonight. When we're done here on the phone, I'm going to go home and watch David Letterman's second-to-last show. And, of course, I'm going to watch the last show tomorrow night. But before I go, I wanted to ask you to do something for me. Since it is presidential season, I wanted to ask you to think about the following. What if you had the opportunity to ask a presidential candidate a question, what would that question be? It could be any topic, any realm, any question that you like. I'd like you to send it to me. I'm going to give you my email address in a second. But the one qualification I want to give you is that I want the question to start with the phrase, as an independent. Mr. So-and-so, Ms. So-and-so, Senator so-and-so, whatever. As an independent, please think about that, and please send me your questions, because I'm thinking about putting together a questionnaire that independents will carry to presidential candidates as they start to stump around the country, and I want you to help me work on that. So send it to me at jsalit, J-S-A-L-I-T, at independentvoting.org, and send it to me over the next couple of days, and I really will take pleasure in reading and be very, very helpful to me. A couple of announcements. We're creating a series of videos that show the highlights from the National Conference of Independence. Many of you couldn't come to New York and see it, and if you haven't had a chance to watch it yet on C-SPAN, these are short 5 to 10 minute videos that feature different themes that we talked about at the conference. And the first one is called Let's Talk About Myths. And this one features Joan Blades, the co-founder of MoveOn.org, T.O. Hardiman from Chicago, Paul Johnson from Arizona, Dr. Lenora Fulani. We will be sending out via email within the next week an announcement about these videos, so please take a look. And these videos are designed, by the way, to be passed on and shared with people that you know, your friends, your family, your coworkers, and our panelists are also going to be getting them out to their networks and their email lists. And they do provide kind of a crash course in the independent movement and all the things that we're concerned about, so get them out as widely as you can and let us know what kinds of responses you get. Next, our spokesperson training goes on. Our Director of Communications, Sarah Lyons, is going to be leading the next spokesperson training call on Wednesday, May 27th at 7 p.m. Eastern. It's Wednesday, May 27th at 7 p.m. Eastern. If you'd like to develop your skills as a spokesperson, and we need hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of spokespeople all around the country, whether you want to learn how to compose a letter to the editor or speak to an organization or do an interview on radio or TV or just talk to your friends about what we're doing in this movement, join the conference call. You can call into the same number you called tonight, and you'll get tips and support from Sarah. And these trainings are just really cool, and people really, really get a lot out of them. And finally, if you are a book lover and a reader, I hope you'll join the Politics for the People book club. This is the now famous book club for independent-minded Americans that was founded by Kathy Stewart. The club reads fiction and nonfiction of interest to independents. It has a very, very lively, ongoing conversation about each selection on the Politics for the People blog, and every selection culminates in a conference call that Kathy hosts with the author, and you get to talk to the author, and it's really great. So if you want to join the book club, I'm going to give you where to go. You visit www.politics4thepeople.wordpress.com. So please sign up for the book club. It's really worthwhile, and you'll really get a lot out of it and enjoy it. So listen, folks, you take care. I hope these remarks give you a little bit of a sense of the picture of what our movement is doing and what lies ahead for us. Keep up the great work. Send me your questions for the presidential candidates, and we'll talk again in the next couple of months. Good night, all. Take care.